Good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair for our weekly meeting, and we are now well into the holiday season. The sign on the Vashon Presbyterian Church, which is across Vashon Highway Southwest from the Gene Boss Studio, from which I am now broadcasting, says, "'Tis the season to be kind." That implies, of course, that every other season we can be angry. Not if you are one of Captain Joe's people. My greetings today go out to all of Captain Joe's people who have sent me some wonderful, wonderful cards and notes and letters in the last week, because the old Mr. Postman drops them off in my mailbox, which is quite a ways. It's about a quarter of a mile from Captain's quarters. And so the opening of the box and the investigation of the contents therein is always the high point of my day, and not the highest point, but a high point of my day. And because we're in the festive holiday season, I've been getting wonderful, wonderful letters, cards, notes, many of them with photographs, and many of them with photographs of things that we had done together during the year. I got one in particular that came to me during the week that had included a photograph of a family reunion out at Point Robinson, in which I was invited and was given the opportunity to pontificate. And there's a photograph of all of that. So all of you who have sent me cards, and in particular those with photographs, they are especially treasured and enjoyed and appreciated. The binnacle list today has a couple of additions to it. I had hoped today to have Kate, the ever-lovely Kate, who is the executive director for The Voice of Vashon. I'd hoped to have her on with me today. And during the time together, we were going to talk about Old Man Winter. I was going to make my traditional on-air donation to The Voice on behalf of all of Captain Joe's people. And I had a signal, flags in the air, from Kate, in which she told me that she is now commuting from the Magical Isle back and forth to Bellingham, which is a pretty far reach. It's more than just a few clicks. And that she is taking care of both of her parents. So I am putting both of them on the binnacle list. And because earlier in the week I was feeling a little bit creaky, I was going to put myself on the binnacle list, but then I righted myself. I am not saying that I went out and cranked up the stationary bike. That remains as yet uncranked. But I did get a little bit of exercise in that took care of the crankiness, and I am aborting the mission of putting myself onto the binnacle list. But this is your captain up in the captain's chair, broadcasting to you live, unscripted and unrehearsed, from the Gene Bosch Memorial Studio on the magical Isle of Vashon, Voice of Vashon, 101.9 on the FM band, with I believe all of 5 watts booming out all over the island. And we are one of those local stations that the FCC licenses with a very low power output. But we stream live all over the world on voiceofvashon.org. And if you are not able to listen to me live, Captain O'Brien puts the broadcast up on the archive, and lately he has been doing it so rapidly, so expeditiously, it was as if he was following the pre-landing checklist. Wheels down and locked. And for which I am enormously grateful. I'm grateful to him for something else, too, and I will mention that in just a minute. But before that, in things that have happened to your captain over the week, my daughter Heather, who lives over in Bellevue, which for those of you who are not familiar with Puget Sound and Seattle geography, is not too far away from the Magical Isle, but she still has to take a ferry to get here. Came over, and we put up the Christmas tree. Now, every year, I get a live tree, and for most of the years that Mary and I were together, we went out to Augie's Tree Farm, or we went out to the other tree farm that's on the island, and I got down in the mud and underneath the tree and cut it down. It was one of the few things about which Mary R. and I ever had any disagreement. And so one year we went to a tree farm to cut down the tree, and the owner of the tree farm said, "I see the two of you are here yet once again." And he said, "And this is your annual test of your relationship, is it not?" And I said, "That's right, because I always want a tree that's going to stick out through the roof, and Mary R. is always satisfied with one which is somewhat smaller." And every year, she would proclaim that this year we were going to pay no more than $10 for the tree. And every year, of course, we paid a lot more than that, and so as the tree was wending its way homeward in the stern section of Little Brown Truck, we would have this annual discussion about how expensive trees have gotten this year. Every year, we went through that exercise. So this year, her daughter, my daughter, Heather, does not test me out on that, and so I do not go under in the mud anymore and cut the tree down myself. So we went to the tree stand here on the Magical Isle and picked one out. I do not have to go through a long, painful, and tortuous exercise of tree selection. I see one, I know right away that that's the one that I want. I select it, I pay for it, I load it into the stern end of Little Brown Truck, and off we go home, and that's exactly what we did. It took us about 5 minutes. And we got home, got the tree up, and the Christmas of 2020, which was the first Christmas after Mary R. died, I had decided that I was going to celebrate Christmas just the way that we did in all the years that we were together. And that included getting a live Christmas tree. And the only thing missing, of course, was the discussion as to size, height, breadth, make. Should it be a noble? Should it be something else? And cost. I, of course, always being the one that wanted to be larger, bigger, wider, and more expensive, Mary R. always wanted it to never cost more than $10. So the tree went home this year, during the week, on Sunday, actually, and it went into the stand, went up, it was suitably leveled, and on it went all of the decorations that Mary and I had accumulated over the years. Every single decoration on this Christmas tree has some significance to us. It is a reflection of our travels together. It's a reflection of my service life. It's a reflection of our children. There are ornaments there that were made by one or more of our children when they actually were really children. There are ornaments there that come from so far back that I don't even remember which year it was. And it's amazing that they've managed to be with me through, some of them with me through, I don't know how many transfers. One of the things that is obligatory for me is tinsel. When I was the commander up in the Sioux, every year that I was the commander there, which was 3 years, we had a all-hands Christmas party. And during the all-hands Christmas party, one of the things that would happen was the decoration of the tree on the mess deck, on the crew's mess deck. And early on, I had proclaimed that for the application of tinsel to the Christmas tree, that uncharacteristically, I was a tinsel thrower, not a tinsel placer. The way you do it, if you are a tinsel thrower, is that you grab a fistful of strands of tinsel, you stand back about 6 feet, 1 fathom, and you toss it at the tree, and where it lands, that's where it lands. It does give sort of a lumpy appearance to the tree. In later years, when Mary R. and I were together and we would have our tree every year, it never cost just $10, she was a tinsel placer. Every single strand carefully installed to balance properly every other strand. But when I was the commander up in the Sioux, I told the family members who were organizing the Christmas tree decorating time, that was always part of the big family Christmas celebration that we had every year. And I told the people that were organizing this that I was indeed a tinsel thrower, and that they should set aside a part of the tree which would belong to the captain. And I would decorate that by tossing the tinsel at the tree. And that's the way that it happened. And so every tree that I have ever had for so many years, I can't count them, has at least some lumpy tinsel. The latest on Blossom. Blossom is becoming a metaphor. Blossom and Sailor and the captain together are becoming a metaphor for our lives. During the week, I took Blossom to the rework facility known as the Fair Isle Animal Veterinary Practice here on the island. It is manned by wonderful people, and Dr. Allen has been a friend for many, many years. His mom lived at Vashon Community Care when I was part of Vashon Community Care, and I've known him for a long, long time, and he's taken care of a number of my animals. So he's the one that did the checkup on Blossom, and I took her in, and I said, I want to have a complete baseline workup so I know exactly what I've got here. And what I've got here is a cat that has hyperthyroidism. We are going to treat that by injecting her with a radioactive substance. And this apparently is going to cure her for what we hope is a long life. Dr. Allen thinks that she's about 14 years old. The Central Valley Animal Rescue, who reluctantly gave her up to me, said that maybe she was as old as 19, but I could tell she wasn't, that cat wasn't any 19. So off we go sometime in the not too distant future. I have a feeling that this is the beginning of both a long voyage and probably an expensive one. But I see all of this as a metaphor. We do for those that we love, and I'm coming to have an enormous affection for this cat. She only weighs just under 6 pounds, and part of that's because of this business with the thyroid that causes her to eat a lot. And she does. She defecates a lot as well, if you're interested in that kind of thing. So, anyway, more will be coming on Blossom, but now we need to move on to some other things. In my traffic today, I had all coasts 493 and 494. What that tells me, and all coasts have to come from Coast Guard headquarters or from somebody who's authorized to issue them. 494 of these messages addressed to the entire Coast Guard, including honored retirees if they want to sign on for it. And both of these have to do with the establishment of new bases, one in St. Louis and one of them on the one of them based St. Louis and one of them in Puerto Rico. So the one in the all coast to all Coast Guard to all Coast Guard people is they I'm being distracted here just a little bit by somebody saying that they're not hearing me, and yet I know that I'm broadcasting. I got a signal from a constant listener who is telling me that my signal's not going out on the web, but I am broadcasting it, Josh, because I can see the needles going back and forth. And so I'm going to carry on, and if necessary, you will have to look at it on the archive. So the All Coast came to me with the following statement, and this to me is emblematic of how wordy we have gotten, at least in my service. And it says, the establishment of this base formally is a conversion from another smaller unit, will continue to champion Coast Guard mission support integration across its area of responsibility, supporting our operational partners on the Western Rivers and in the heartland of the United States while delivering exceptional customer-focused mission support. The only thing that got left out was somehow referring to the workforce. So, come on, guys. All of that is to say, we've commissioned this new base. You guys out there in the Western Rivers are going to now get some really good service. That's what all of that means. So, That's my railing against overloading all of these words. In the icebreaker world, the Davy or Davy Corporation in Canada has acquired the big shipyard in Helsinki, and I believe that this Helsinki shipyard is the old Wärtsilä shipyard. And the Finns are interesting in that they build some really great icebreakers. Most of them are designed for working in the Baltic, so they're relatively shallow draft. But they also built a number of icebreakers for the Russians. And at the end of World War II, which was also the end of the conflict between Finland and Russia, Finland had to make some war reparations. And one of the ways that she did that was to build icebreakers to Finnish designs for Russia. You can always tell a Finnish icebreaker because they look like a floating apartment block. They have enormous, very high superstructures. The center of gravity is up pretty high. When they get out in the open ocean, they get away from the Baltic and they have to make a long transit. They must be absolutely brutal and vicious rollers. So what this tells me, though, is that Canada may be getting serious about building some very large icebreakers. Canada has talked about building at least one very large icebreaker for many, many years, and has run out of it. But now they're running a new shipbuilding program. They've already built several ice-strengthened Arctic patrol vessels. They look like very capable little ships to me. And the acquisition of what I believe to be the old Wärtsilä shipyard, and hopefully with the people with it that go with it, means that they will be building some very capable and probably very large icebreakers. In the and we're going to wait and see. Of course, any U.S. icebreakers under by statute have to be built in the United States, so we would not be able to hook on to that. But in any case, we'll see what the Canadians do. It's always of interest to me in particular what the Canadians do, because I have a very fond relationship with the Canadian Coast Guard that operates their icebreakers. So, again, this will be a subject that will have more attention from your captain. And now we move on to the Washington State Ferry System. Once again, this last week, another one of the boats had to go into layup for mechanical reasons. And I'm always interested in particular in the class of ships which are called the Issaquah class. Issaquah was the lead ship in a class of six of them, and they were built out of, not to put too fine a point on it, really crappy steel. They have to be inspected. They go into the shipyard once a year for both a Coast Guard inspection and for repainting. I can go aboard any one of the six Issaquahs and tell you almost within a month where she is in her overhaul cycle by how much rust there is. And the ferry system does not use any of the people who are the members of the crew. They do not do any work while the boats are underway. They stand about admiring their handiwork of having parked all of the cars that they've gotten into the boats, but they don't do any work. Is this part of a union arrangement, a contract arrangement? I don't know the answer to that. If I were to become the commanding officer of the ferry system, which I would be happy to do, and I wouldn't even charge them anything for it, we would certainly be looking at all of those contractual arrangements and get at least some kind of ship's work going in the period that the boats are underway. In the Spratly Islands, let's go back now to the South China Sea. Down in the South China Sea, where we have a U.S. Coast Guard and a U.S. Navy presence. But the big presence, of course, is the escalating and ramping up whatever expression you choose to use, confrontations that are going on between the People's Republic of China Coast Guard, the People's Republic of China Navy, the Philippine Navy, and now some commercial interests. Another confrontation took place during the week where a vessel of the People's Republic of China used water cannons against a relatively small vessel that was resupplying the old LST, the old landing ship tank, that the Philippine government has parked on that island to maintain its sovereignty there. It's getting now out of the realm of everybody just squirting a little water at each other. It's getting where people are beginning to get really angry. My suggestion before remains the same, that the senior captain of the all of the Coast Guard ships that are out there, the Coast Guards of the various countries that are involved. The senior captain calls a meeting in his cabin, and he gets all the other captains together, and he says that it is time for us to knock this off. Let the politicians then figure out who actually owns this place, these islands, and then let's move on from there. There are a huge number of, in particular, PRC fishing boats working in that area. They have medical issues. They have mechanical issues. There's plenty of search and rescue business out there. There's plenty of fleet protection business out there to keep everybody busy without everybody trying to make a point without doing any permanent damage to anybody else. Well, we're at the point now where there's going to be some permanent damage, and I'm hopeful that we can get it under control before any of those things happen. We are in the middle of Old Man Winter. I've already talked about that. Old Man Winter, which is the last fundraiser for Voice of Bashan. And next week, I'll have Kate has agreed to come on with me. I'll have Captain O'Brien on. I will have the counselor on with me. And I will tell my now traditional story of getting the Christmas tree for my much-loved icebreaker Northwind in Wellington, New Zealand. And in the meantime, Captain Joe's people is of a mind to send in any kind of a financial recognition of the festive holiday season, it would be much appreciated. That's what keeps us going here on the air. We'll talk about a little bit more about this next year, or next week, not next year. So one other quick note, I also got a signal a couple weeks ago about the Navy getting into the whole business of large unmanned surface vessels. It is my hope, and it would certainly be my command if I were in the position to command it, that we not spend a lot of time or effort on these things. I cannot see the value. I cannot see what they, because they require somebody someplace to guide them. And when you get into a place like the Singapore Straits, or you get into Tokyo One, or you get into the approaches into Hong Kong, where there's a great deal of traffic, that's not the time and that's not the place for somebody sitting in a nice, warm, comfortable chair thousands of miles away to be manipulating this large unmanned vehicle. And I see them going the same way as the littoral combat ships, one of which is tied up over at Bremerton in the reserve fleet. And another one, which they found at least some sort of a small job for her out in the South China Sea. And she made a Freedom of Navigation transit down in the South China Sea. Boy, I sure hope that that captain never has to fight that ship. And I sure as hell hope he never has to take it into and survive a Pacific typhoon. And now we have come once again to the end of our time together. We've covered a lot of material. I hope the signal did indeed go out onto the through the World Wide Web, but if not, Truman will get it up on the will get it up on the archive. This is, as always, your Captain Joe on station and watching properly. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again, and we will meet again next week for the annual and much loved and eagerly awaited annual Christmas broadcast. You are always, as always, in the palm of my hand.